Welcome to Nerds Amalgamated, a podcast that covers the latest events in science, pop culture, and gaming.
I'm the professor, aspiring game developer, sci-fi aficionado, and completely and undeniably a geek trying to take over the world. I'll be breaking down the news from tech to gaming.
I am the DJ, a humble nerd, a big weeb,
and a watcher from the halls of the multiverse.
Just kidding. Anyways, I'll be breaking down all things comics to movies to anime.
Join us and stay hydrated as we quench you with witty banter, unintentionally hilarious hot takes, and trivia more fun than a night at the pub, courtesy of Nerds Amalgamated.
Welcome to another episode of Nerds Amalgamated. I'm the DJ, and with me today I have the ever-loving Professor.
Ever-loving?
Oh, well, I was going
to
say
evergreen. That's an odd choice of word to describe me.
and the impregnable BPM.
I don't think you know what any of these words are.
Well, I do know that impregnable means he cannot be stopped. Well, he cannot be penetrated, but yes.
Yeah, I do the penetrating.
How are you all doing?
I'm going well.
Nice.
I was fine until you ruined my day.
Hey! Look on the bright side. At least you didn't do as much damage as what my hot water bottle did to my leg. It's very, very painful.
Are you gonna give the context?
So basically, it was so cold on a Tuesday night that I decided to put some boiling water in a hot water bottle, placed it on my lap, and water just hit my leg harder than a ton of bricks.
It was above 20 degrees, by the way.
It was 14! 14!
It was not. I checked the weather.
Oh, it was really painful, I'll tell you that. I had 8 phone calls to the ambulance just to get the ambulance to where I was staying, and had a trip to the hospital in the emergency department and stayed there overnight and had a lot of pain hit on me few days.
So, like, what the devs are thinking about sustainability of live service games?
Oh, maybe. But yes, this week we'll be talking about the live service concerns, Scott Pilgrim's angst, and gamers contributing to science. But yes, to your earlier question, yes, it was as painful as live service games. So
terrible segue, but okay.
Hey, it's my first try.
We'll get you trained up.
So what have you got on this of the live service games fiasco that's going on now?
Well, a live service game is a game that has frequent updates and in-app purchases.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal is to spread out your income over a longer period and hopefully make more money than a single one-off purchase of the game at the beginning.
Mm.
Although we're looking at a survey from Game Developer Collective of 600 developers, and 70% of them had concerns about the future of live service business models.
600, you say?
Yep.
That's a decent
pool. Yeah, it's a decent pool. So what are the concerns they've got for the titles?
Well, their biggest concern is that players will lose interest in live service games. The second biggest is competition from other live service games. Which I think is an interesting point, because when you're looking at these sorts of games, they tend to be designed to keep you playing for hours and hours on end. And they're basically a second job.
Mm.
Who has time to have a second job and then play other games?
Oh, people who YouTube for income, possibly.
Or Twitch streamers, or like influencers, for example.
I feel like if playing games for your job counts, then that's just kind of cheating.
I guess. But to your first concern in terms of people will get bored of it, I mean, that's the nature of the business, isn't it? Like, for example, Fortnite, it's been going on and on and on, and it at times it can get very boring, but then as soon as like new content comes up, people will go, okay, I'm gonna get back into playing this game with this new character and all.
Well, that's pretty much, that's just how games work. People play the crap out of them, then they lose interest, and then there's a new update or expansion or whatever. Yeah. And they're like, oh, let's give it I haven't played this in like 7 years, let's give it a try.
Though, well, that's assuming you can still play the game from 7 years ago and they haven't shut down the servers.
This is true. Or the game's just as crappy as it has always been. Warcraft World.
What's the newest one now? Is it last I remember, the last expansion was Dragonflight, I think.
I have no idea. I have given Blizzard the flip after their screw up of Diablo 3, the newer Diablo.
Oh yeah.
4 is the latest, but a lot of people were unhappy with 3 when it launched.
Yeah, 3 wasn't that bad, but it had things. But nothing. I think the best one's always been Diablo 2 for me.
Yeah, I've seen some of the snippets from Diablo 4, and I still don't get why people were angry about it. Was it the lore? Was it the lore changes, or was it just the how broken the classes were, or what's up? But that being said, though, like if you don't make the game as entertaining as it is, people will go to other services, to other games and services to get their fix, essentially.
Even this entertaining game will see a drop off after a short period.
Mm.
Like, look at the player count for Helldivers 2.
Okay.
I'm just pulling up the chart for them now.
I still have not played Helldivers 2. Please don't kill me.
It is still the fourth most popular game on Steam by current players at the moment.
I just bought it. I haven't installed it yet, but I
will. Oh, shit.
But you can see a slow drop-off over the last 30 days of data.
Yeah, but that's after... what was the... I saw the Helldivers 2 news on Twitter. Their CEO did a challenge, and what was supposed to take months and months just ended in just like 2 or 3 days or something like that. And I think the Valley got liberated a couple of months earlier as well.
Yeah, they announced the challenge to kill like 2 billion bugs, expecting it to take a week, and they beat it in 2 days.
I see what I mean.
Pulling up even more data though.
Yeah.
Helldivers peaked about a week after launch at 458,000 concurrent players and is currently just under 200,000 concurrent players.
Oh.
At least there won't be any queues.
Bye-bye ping.
But I'm not sure I'd call Helldivers a live service game.
Mm.
I suppose it is because it relies on the continued involvement of the developers. But as far as I'm aware, there aren't many DLCs or microtransactions planned.
No, not yet anyway.
Wait, I thought Helldivers, there was some microtransactions, if I recall. Was there? Or unless if I'm sadly mistaken.
Actually, there is.
Okay.
According to a quick skim, it looks like they're pretty well regarded, so that's probably why I haven't heard about them.
Hmm.
But if you look at other games with crappy microtransactions, then people get really angry about them.
Mm.
Especially if those transactions are to like pay and win, unfortunately a lot of Korean developers do. Those games are fantastic. Well, I thought the ones I've played are.
Besides Helldivers, how about Power World? Well, that's also classed as a live service game, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's still in its beta at the moment.
Really? Okay.
I mean, early access, sorry.
Okay.
And it too has a drop-off.
Yeah.
If I look at the chart, it peaked at launch at 2.1 million concurrent players and is now down to only 70,000.
Yeah. That's because their multiplayer is shitty. From what I've heard and read about it, I haven't tried it myself. I'm playing solo at the moment just so I get a feel for the game.
But you'll see that come back a bit when they release some updates.
Hmm. I mean, the same case. I mean, compare those two games to like games like Baldur's Gate, for example, which is not. Is it okay? Is that like that's also a live service game, right?
No, it's not. It's single player with no microtransactions at all.
Yep. Hmm. Now compare that to those two to the player count for Baldur's Gate. I mean, that'd be a very interesting comparison, like a AAA studio versus indie dev studio.
No, I'm seeing the same pattern here, that they peaked shortly after launch and have had a steady decline ever since.
Okay.
And I won't expect to ever see them get their highs back because they've announced that there aren't going to be no DLCs for Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, yeah.
And I think more games should do that. I think games shouldn't have to take up your entire life and be a full-time job.
Hmm.
They're more like, you know, jump on, play the game with by yourself or with friends, jump off type thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's even when, like, that's the same with, like, the survival games. They're, like, online survival games like Rust, Conan Exiles. They are, I think they're live service because there is transaction there, I think. Well, no transactions, but there's a lot of updates happening. Like, the newest one with something of what's it called, Land of War or whatever, Age of War, which is their latest thing, and they've got a donation thing going up for Save the Children.
Okay.
I think is also interesting is that this survey asks developers what their monetization method for their next game would be, and the majority of them by far have replied that they want an upfront payment on release, so a sale at the beginning is for a copy of the game rather than having in-game items or battle passes.
Oh, battle passes. I hate those things.
Like the same, like season passes are just as bad sometimes.
Hmm.
They're the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they want a sale instead of a... Wait,
subscription. A sale rather than a subscription.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to note that they're comparing their most recent game with their next game. So their most recent, for digital release with an upfront payment, the most recent game came in at 72% and the next game came in at 76%. For a physical retail release, previous game came in at 26% and the next game has dropped to 22%.
Ooh.
So I think that's mostly going to be game developers realizing that there's no market for physical games anymore. That realistically, you get the best reach from an online storefront like Steam.
Yeah, not to mention like the humble games shop. It's now a dying breed. Like, when was the last time you ever stepped foot in front of an EB Games to actually buy a game?
Oh, you're not talking about the humble game store, as in the humble bundle store.
No, oh no. Oh no!
Because that one's still going quite strong.
Oh yeah, they're going strong. But what I'm trying to say is, like, the whole idea of physical game releases, like, that's dying in a sense. Like,
yeah, a few weeks ago, Microsoft basically shut down their physical games department.
Yeah.
So why not keep going and everyone shut down their physical games department?
Mm.
Half the consoles these days don't even come with a disc drive.
Oh, shit.
You can buy the higher-end models come with a disc drive, but the lower-end models don't even have a spot for it. The new PS5 Slim that they were developing isn't going to have one, but it will have a optional add-on disc drive.
Here's another thing to consider. You reckon the reason why people prefer buying the games online to buying games in store, do you reckon it's also because of what happened in the recent years with COVID as well?
No, I think physical games were on their way out long before COVID.
Okay. Yeah.
Cheaper and easier to release on Steam.
Or any other online store type thing, like EA Games, whatever.
Yeah, the problem with online when you buy games online is also the idea that games companies can also screw you under. Like, remember with Ubisoft, for example, with the recent news of The Crew, whether you heard about it, that they have decided to tell users, oh yeah, don't buy The Crew. You can't buy The Crew in our store anymore.
Which makes sense because it's been shut down. But I think what you're thinking of is The Crew being taken out of people's libraries.
Yeah.
Which is like someone coming to your house and taking the disc from you, even though the game shut down, so the disc is useless.
Hmm.
They are basically doing that. And I think that's probably linked to the Stop Killing Games campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
Issue, though, with physical games is they have to pay for shipping and printing. And if you don't sell as many copies as you print, you lose money. It's just far more economical to sell online.
By the way, with the game developers, in relation with monetization, did you hear about? I think it was Ubisoft as well that said, gamers should tip the game developers as well.
A former president, yes, yes. That was quite silly.
I was like, really?
Yeah, let's not shove tipping culture into other industries, please. The rest of the world gets by just fine without tips, America. You can do it too.
Yes.
Can you imagine just like I for one want to bring in tipping culture so I could tip, so if it's a shitty game, I'll tip them $10. But with an angry message saying, thank you for making a very, very crappy game, you bastards.
So you'd reward them by giving them more money.
But then you could just leave
a Steam review.
A Steam review
doesn't cost you anything.
But it wouldn't cost me anything, but there's no guilt to it. It'd be like, I'm not going to read this, but if you give them money, that will incentivize them to read the message with it.
Do you think the accounting department cares?
Maybe not. I mean, the game developer would care. You're right, the accounting department wouldn't give a shit, but the game developers would care, like, oh, he's giving me money and a lovely note with this money.
I think they'll just take the money and delete the message, really.
I guess. But do you reckon that's... But jokes aside, though, like, you reckon that would be also another incentive they could... I know it's silly, but let's think about it, though. Like, you reckon that would have been an interesting idea if they pursue it?
No, because if they ask for tips after you buy a game and they still ask for tips, they got to lose business because no one's got to buy the game because they expect the tip from when you buy the game. So they just got to overall, like, if they do go into the whole tip culture or into the gaming industry, the game industry's got to kill itself even quicker.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's true. So what other aspects of the report did the game developers have concerns with?
Well, 20% of respondents were concerned about competition from other entertainment, which makes sense. People only have a certain amount of money and a certain amount of time. If you want them to subscribe to your game and spend their time playing your game, it's a zero-sum game. It has to take away from someone else.
I guess so. I mean, if I would have compared this to like Netflix and Amazon Prime, like if Netflix is a cool new show, Prime is not releasing anything, then people flock to Netflix. If Prime has a good new show, people will and Netflix is not doing anything, people will go to Prime. Like people want more.
But in general, like in the game industry, competition is just going to always happen because there'll be someone who's got to design a better game and they're like, okay, we're going to take points from this game developer to try and make our game as popular as that game. So they equal out their profit.
Yeah.
And the bar of entry for the games industry is much lower than the bar of entry to television streaming.
Which is true. And plus with the competition, I think it's good in terms of, let's say, what can we add into the game that what others are trying and how can we improve it on our game? So it'd be like making gaming industry innovate.
Yeah, there's a lot of cross pollination of ideas.
Hmm.
And it's sort of and the competition ideology keeps the game industry people interested in gaming in general.
But that being said, there can be a time where you get too much content and you go, yeah, I'm really, really burned out by this.
It's true, but it's just the, I think that's just part of the experience of running a gaming device. They always want to do one, they want to always want to one up each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes that can lead to disaster.
Hmm. And it's also dependent on how many people are willing to play that game as well.
Yeah, because every individual has different tastes in gaming, use their clothes, it's just general culture.
Yeah, yeah. So is there anything that struck by you, Professor, besides those figures that you've spoken out?
Well, I'm hoping this might signify a change in the landscape away from live service games, because as a consumer, I'm really not a fan of live service games and the way they're designed to abuse FOMO and be entirely addictive to keep you paying.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting, though, now that you mention it, with the whole subscription fee model in gaming, it's like people will pay a lot of money when it comes to like subscription fees for games and stuff, but they will not pay a subscription fees for things that are not game related. Like, let's say, for example, Adobe, for example. Like, no one wants to pay a subscription fee for Adobe stuff.
And also with the decline of lives, it could also stop half finished games coming out and paying full price for it.
Hmm. I don't know. Halo Infinite had that thing though. It was half finished, yet people still played that game.
It has a complete multiplayer component though.
Hmm.
It had lots of issues, but the multiplayer was relatively complete compared to the story mode.
Mm. Okay.
But overall, like, gamers do not want to pay like $90, $60 for an incomplete game.
Yeah, yeah, that's a given. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But at least it's the gaming industry is not as contentious as the entertainment industry as of lately. I know, yes, you guys are going to say bad segue.
What's going on in the world of Hollywood? Another writer strike?
Well, I think it's going to be potentially a writer strike. But so you guys heard of Scott Pilgrim versus the World, right?
I know. Not in a long time, but yes.
So a while back, Scott Pilgrim came back to Netflix and released a new show. The series creator, Brian Lee O'Malley, came on Twitter a couple of days ago saying that the streaming services like Netflix tend to release shows and seasons all at once. And as someone who has his whole season drop all at once in the same title, it's the dumbest shit ever. There's literally no upside. Imagine if the whole season of X-Men 97 was out, he posted. And he decided to vent out even more by saying he would have liked Netflix to release two episodes for a 4-week run, but in the end, the streaming service chose to launch the whole season at once.
Well, I think I sort of agree with Netflix's choice, like having one episode or two episodes weekly basis. People ain't got to watch like two episodes. They mainly want to sit down and watch like an entire season.
I mean,
I want to see the statistics, like how many people actually prefer the weekly model.
I mean, I too would love to see the statistics, but like, okay, one half of me likes the Netflix model in terms of, okay, I don't have to wait like weekly kind of thing. But then there are the other half of me likes the weekly model in terms of, okay, once an episode airs out, I can go to people, I can discuss with other people about the episode, going, okay, what do you guys think of what's going to happen in the next episode? What do you think about, putting up theories and whatnot?
Yeah, I'm inclined to think that the weekly model works better for maintaining mindshare, but I'm not sure about the drop-off. Is there more of a drop-off for people watching the whole season? Basically, what I'm trying to say is, do people who binge, say, 80% of the people who sit down to binge a series will finish that entire series eventually. But do the same number of people finish watching it if it comes out weekly? Because I know weekly shows are a lot easier for me to forget about.
Yeah.
Well, according to this article I just popped up, what also could it could also be beneficial on the weekly because it has longer production time, so it's a better product when it comes out. Whereas it's just if it's like dropped like one after other, it's probably very rushed, and that can sort of destroy the experience of watching the show.
And plus, it also depends on the brand, like Scott Pilgrim versus the World, like. Not many people remember that show. Like, there's the movie and that's it. Like, and maybe the comic books as well. But do anyone else remember it? Like, how long it came out?
Well, the people who are into it are really into it.
I can agree on. But like, let's say from a casual viewer's perspective, like, do you remember that show ever since? Do you remember Scott Pilgrim ever since that movie came out?
I've never actually seen it.
I've never seen it either.
I think I watched it on TV, like Netflix or something. Didn't go to the cinema.
I would like to put this. Can you imagine putting this idea in the world of anime, though? Right? Can you imagine instead of like, let's say, for example, Dragon Ball Z, for example, put every week we have two episodes. Like, you reckon that that will help the anime in terms of popularity, or you reckon that will hinder the anime in terms of popularity?
It depends on the patience of the viewers. Like, if they're like deep, like into the story, into the lore of the said anime, then the weekly drops they'd be interested in. But on the other hand, there's those who don't have the time to watch it weekly. They only have it like when they have a day off work or on vacation or something. That's when they can catch up. So having it only weekly drop and then stops for God knows how long or whatever, instead of having it like seasonal, it drops this entire thing. People are the ones that can't watch it weekly might prefer it better. But again, it's all up to the way they watch the show.
Yeah. And it also, as I say, it also comes back to like if you do it in the weekly, the professor's right, you can forget about it as well, and you can also like talk, and it also comes back to the like talking with your friends and talking with your about the lore, the theories and whatnot. Like, if you do it in a, you can do the same thing on a seasonal drop as well, but at the same time, it just, like I said, it just talks, but then it'd be more like a retrospective debate rather than a continuous debate. But you guys reckon the guys in the right about it, though? Like, how it's a big piece of shit? It's a shit move?
I think it depends on your goal.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said, I'm looking at the article here. They said, in the past decade, netizens have become more critical of how TV series are released online, from Disney Plus to Amazon and Hulu. Some series find themselves hit with weekly releases, while others are dumped all at once, even in batches. The inconsistency seems to have franked consumers as the war between big binges and weekly updates wages on. Besides Scott Pilgrim, there are other anime series that have suffered the same fate, such as JoJo's Bizarre Adventures, the Stone Ocean series. But thanks to recent releases like Delicious in Dungeon, there's hope for Netflix to have found a better schedule to release the animated projects.
Yeah, I think it's mainly up to, as the professor said, what they anticipate to do with the show and how people perceive or how people watch that.
That's true. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's more of a. I think it's more of a
personal preferences.
Personal preference.
Yeah. See, I personally don't mind the weekly show, the weekly, but then sometimes if a show is too good and the suspense is killing you, then I'll be like, okay, god damn it, do it. They should have done it all at once. God damn it.
Yeah.
Like Arcane, for example, that was a good show, and I really hated how they did the whole, like, they tried to do it like, well, not really weekly, but like block by block. So one block would be five episodes, another block would be another month, like five episodes, and another block would be like five episodes, that kind of deal.
Mm.
Like I was like, oh, this is, the suspense is too much. How about sorry.
No, I think with Arcane, with the block drops, I think in that scenario, since it is a great show, having the five blocks would sort of build up the popularity of the show, therefore wanting people to watch more of it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, at least it's good to see people coming together and contributing things, like gamers contributing to science.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
That's interesting how gamers do that.
Uh-huh. So, Professor, you've got an interesting story about us in relation to gaming and researching.
Yeah, so the developers Gearbox teamed up with some scientists to implement a mini-game in Borderlands 3 called Borderlands Science. And it turns out that this mini-game was modeling the relationships of evolutionary relationships of different kinds of bacteria that live in the human gut.
Okay.
That's an interesting way to get science.
Yeah. So the science team were massively multiplayer online science, which makes me think they must have done this stuff before. So there's a quote here from the author of the paper about this project, who says, in half a day, the players collected five times more data about DNA sequences than their previous project, Philo, collected in 10 years.
Wow.
So they've tried this before, but as a separate product, and it hasn't really taken off. But putting it into a popular video game series has made it absolutely huge.
I guess it could be a fun way to improve sciences, plus also educate people in the sciences. It's a very it's an interesting concept, and I think it's gonna be. And it's a good way how things could, thing with gamers, they're quite particular and obsessive in some cases.
This is, what's interesting about this is the fact that this is way beyond the time World of Warcraft was used as an experiment. Remember the pandemic simulator?
Oh, that was an accident, really.
Really? Oh, okay.
The blood curse or something like that. Basically, there was a curse that a boss could put on you. Corrupted blood, that's the name of it.
Oh, yeah.
A curse that a boss could put on you could be carried out of the raid by a glitch and transferred to players who were in the overworld. So people either traveled around spreading it deliberately or were healers healing people from it. And it's been studied by... studied by scientists to find out if it's an accurate model of how people will behave.
Mm. Some people even you compared this to the COVID-19 pandemic. They said here, the Elysium Project, an independent fan-led organization maintaining early versions of WoW, ran an experiment titled Pandemic in Azeroth, which mimicked the corrupted blood incident to COVID-19. The pandemic infected 88% of active players, but by implementing sanitization and isolation measures, this number soon dropped to 42.2%.
It's just interesting. Gamers improving sciences, or games improving sciences, or
gamification is a really interesting field.
Yeah, I know. I think even in the army. They use gamification in combat strategy, like in games like DayZ or
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty.
Actually, What you're probably thinking of is the base for DayZ Armor.
It's Armor, yeah.
Is based on a product that... So the company was one company up until a bit over 10 years ago, I think, and then they split into the games company and the military company. But they basically started making military simulators.
Yep.
And then selling a stripped-down version of that as a game. I think it's called Real Virtuality.
Something like that. But it links to the use of games to train or educate people in certain situations.
Sorry, Real Virtuality is the engine. The training software was Virtual Battle Space.
Okay. You reckon we might see more of these like gamification studies in the long run?
Oh, if they've like if it's been a successful endeavor and it's improved sciences even by a small amount, they may look into putting it into other type of games or stuff like that. So it could be a possible route science could take.
Yeah, there's a big push at the moment in science to implement what they call citizen science, which is using everyday people to collect data and process it.
Oh yeah, like the SETI project, right?
Yeah. So gamification of particular ways to process the data. I think now that it's been proven as a working method, will probably start to take off.
But but in terms of getting candidates for gamification studies, wouldn't there be like a sort of a criteria that you have to fit in, or is it just like anyone can come in and contribute?
It would probably depend on the experiment.
Mm.
In this case, since they were just processing the data, they probably had an algorithm and a puzzle, like turn that into a puzzle game. Other citizen science initiatives I've seen are things like counting koalas, where you have an app on your phone, and if you spot a koala, you log it.
Yeah, so it's more around like simple science.
Yeah.
But this is also the first time I've heard of something like this being done deliberately.
Mm.
So there's probably a whole field of gamified science that hasn't been explored yet.
Mm.
And possible new ones coming out if it succeeds in trying to.
And what's also good about this this is the fact that it's a community building effort that comes along with it. As according to the Zyka, they said that here we have 4.5 million people who contributed to science. In a sense, the result, this result is theirs too, and they should feel proud about it. Said while this there. I'm sorry for butchering that name. It shows that we cannot fight the fear of misconceptions that members of the public may have about science and start building communities who work collectively to advance knowledge.
And as the saying goes, knowledge is power.
Yeah, it's true. But then, like, I always thought the internet was that place where you can build communities and start a collective... like working collectively to advance knowledge, but you reckon that the concept of the internet is kind of getting stagnant in a sense?
Well, the internet was originally developed as a military project. Then on top of that, they built the World Wide Web, which was originally developed as a science project to help scientists share their data. So I think that was the original intent, and we've come a long way from that. But it can still be used for the original intent.
Hmm. And what's also interesting is how other companies have... interesting to see how other companies might grab onto this initiative. Like, for example, if let's say EA or Blizzard. Hell, even Minecraft. I think Minecraft has got has its own community building and knowledge storage section, don't they? Like last I remember, there's a whole place where someone created a whole Minecraft server, which contained knowledge, books and literature.
Yeah, it was a journal, a library of banned works.
Yeah,
and the idea was it was harder for the government to spy on gamers and find out that they're looking at banned works rather than just going to bannedbooks.com.
Yeah. The uncensored library, they call it.
That's it.
Okay. What did the results come up with, by the way? besides the known results that you've said, were there any other result, anything else that pointed out to you?
I think that's something that will require further research.
Hmm.
I haven't seen any actionable results from this, but it
also needs further collaboration as well.
Hmm. Yeah. But this is an important part of processing the data to make those future studies possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
As I say, it's an interesting step to what science is about.
Yeah.
It's something to probably keep an eye on, maybe see what else they can pull off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also how it could be, and also what could, how it could elicit activity.
Yes. Illicit activities. Yes.
Well, the internet's a big and dark place as well sometimes.
Oh, that'll be an interesting one. Imagine like you've got the authorized experiment, and then all of a sudden there's like, oh, but according to the dark web, we tried the same experiment and we came up with a different response to this.
Well, I'm sort of leaning into more like, though it's probably already happening, but with this type of thing, they could have like hackers sort of creating very powerful malware through the assistance of like amateur programmers or something through a game that relates to like cyberspace or sci-fi or something, you know?
Oh shit. that will require a lot of effort and a lot of gaslighting to tell the other person, hey, we're part of NASA and we're gonna make this magnificent program for the greater good.
It can happen. The internet is a dark, large space sometimes.
Oh shit. Alright, anyways, on to our shout outs. On April 17, 2024, it's the 10th anniversary of NASA's Kepler Space Telescope confirming the discovery of the first Earth-sized planet in the habitable zone of another star. So using NASA's Kepler Space Telescope, the astronomers have discovered the first Earth-sized planet orbiting a star in a habitable zone. The range of distance from a star where liquid water might pool onto the surface of an orbiting planet. The discovery of Kepler 186f confirms that the planets of the size of Earth exist in the habitable zones of the stars other than the Sun. While planets have previously been found in the habitable zone, they have all at least 40% larger in size than planet Earth, and understanding their makeup is challenging. Kepler-186f is more reminiscent of Earth. As someone put it, the discovery of this is a significant step towards finding worlds like planet Earth, and future NASA missions such like the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite and the James Webb Space Telescope will discover the nearest rocky exoplanets and determine their composition and atmospheric conditions, continuing humankind's quest to find the Earth-like worlds. And for our messed up moment in nerddom, number 10, Professor, what have you got?
Another fun one.
Oh, yeah?
The Tuskegee syphilis study.
Oh, shit. Oh, no, I've heard about this.
Yeah, basically, scientists decided to take 600 poor African-American men, of whom 399 had syphilis, and not provide any treatment for the syphilis to see what would happen.
Wow, that is.
They promised them free medical care and then never provided it.
Wow.
They didn't even tell them that they had syphilis.
That is very messed up. Humans are jerks. Like, we really are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This could also be like a, could be seen as a racial terror attack type as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What was the government response to this? Like, it was, if I recall, it was government backed, wasn't it? That whole thing.
It was, yeah. And it wasn't until a couple of decades after the study finished that the president, I think it was Bill Clinton, said sorry.
Oh, yeah, I think I vaguely remember that. Yeah, 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 yeah.
I don't think sorry would be enough, bro. That's a war crime, in my opinion.
It's, yeah, definitely a crime against humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because syphilis, especially once they discovered a cure a couple of decades into the experiment, they then continued it for another couple of decades without giving treatments, effective treatment, even though it was cured easily. And it is a disease that will eventually lead to death.
Yes, it will.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's slow as well.
Yeah, most of the experiments that were held, that was done in Alabama in Mason County. Oh, county. Oh man, those poor people. And on to our wacky movie for this episode. It on the 17th of April, 1980, Stalker premiered in the Netherlands. And this was Andrei Tartakovsky's Stalker, which mesmerized audiences. This feature starred Eliza Alexander Why'd you give me these complicated names, Professor? Why?
They're not complicated. They're just Russian.
It's Friend and Like. I think Friend and Like and Alexandre... Hey, Dan Sosiski.
Thank you, BPM. Thank you. You saved my hide. And the plot, it goes, a guide leads two men through an area known as the Zone to find a room that grants wishes. Wait, what?
That's an interesting plot story.
It makes more sense in context.
Yeah.
But basically... It's loosely based on a book called Roadside Picnic.
Okay.
And basically the idea is there's these places called zones, which are, no one's really quite sure what's going on there, but weird things happen in them. So the stalker is someone who explores the zone and at great risk to himself. And he's hired on by the writer and the professor, who both want to reach this location in the zone where their wishes will be granted.
Ah, does sound interesting. And,
yeah, the wish granter will give you your deepest wish.
You've seen the movie, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's very atmospheric, partly because they actually did film it in a place that was inhospitable to human life.
Yep.
A bunch of the cast and crew died of a particular type of cancer, which is believed to have been caused by pollution in the area.
Yeah.
They went there.
It wasn't Chernobyl, was it, that they went to film?
It was an industrial zone in Estonia.
Oh, shit.
What you might be thinking of with Chernobyl is that the game Stalker, which is itself loosely based on this book and the movie, set in Chernobyl.
Yeah.
And people who go and explore Chernobyl these days call themselves stalkers in homage to the game.
Mm. Wow. More homage, but then they know it's all the homage to the book. That sounds like an interesting film. I might have to even find it.
Yeah, you can actually watch it for free on YouTube. It's been posted there by Moss Film, I think. I'll see if I can find you a link for the show notes.
Hmm. But this movie has some interesting trivia. So, like, for example, in an interview on the MK2 DVD, the production designer, Rashid Safalin, recalled that Tartakovsky spent a year shooting the outdoor scenes. However, when the crew returned to Moscow, they found that the film has been improperly developed and the footage was unusable. The film has been shot on the new Kodak 5247 stock, which the Soviet laboratories were not very, very familiar. Even before the film stock problem was discovered, relations between Tartakovsky and Stalker Stalker's first cinematographer, Gren Rehberg, had deteriorated. After seeing the poorly developed material, Tartakovsky fired Rehberg. Safalin contends that Tartakovsky was so despondent at having to discard all the outdoor work that he wanted to abandon further work on the film. Man, that's gotta really suck. The film contains 142 shots in 163 minutes, with the average shot length of more than 1 minute and many shots lasting more than 4 minutes.
So long shots.
Very, very long shots. Many viewers have suggested that the filming's expedition into the zone was an allegory for an escape from behind the Iron Curtain into freedom. But the director has always resisted these wild metaphoric conjectures, and he simply viewed the ideas of the zone as a dramatic tool to draw out the personalities of the three protagonists. The zone doesn't symbolize anything any more than anything else does in my films. The zone is just a zone. It's the life, and he wants to make his way through it. Man may break down, or he may come through it. Oh, that's a nice way of putting it.
It's a very philosophical movie.
Yep, and of course, people like debating and talking about philosophy.
Yeah, yeah.
And whatever their philosophy of that philosophy is.
Anyways, you guys got any plans for the rest of the week?
I might just go and rewatch Stalker.
That is fair.
B3! Alright, so on that note, that's all we have for this week. Where can they find us, Professor?
YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. Anywhere.
Alright. So that's all we have for this week. Stay happy, stay nerdy, and I'll see you guys on the next episode.
Look after yourself, stay hydrated. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.